Greetings of love to all of you this morning on a very drippy, chilly morning. Glad to be together in the house of God and enjoy the warm fellowship. Our Sunday school class, a question came up about who was responsible for the storm. Was that something that God sent, or was it efforts of the enemy to somehow hinder the work of God? And I don't know that I can answer that, but I do know that the Bible tells us that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and the rulers of darkness of this world and wickedness in high places, and that the Christian life faces much opposition because we have an enemy. And in Revelation, it talks about him making war against the church and casting out a flood from the mouth of the dragon to destroy this man-child, the church. And so we do know that as Christians, that we are not promised an easy road. Rather, we're promised that there's going to be a lot of stress in our lives, a lot of opposition, a lot of conflict, warfare. And Jesus tells us that as time goes on, as we get closer to the time, this is going to intensify. And I would like to look at some scriptures out of the book of Luke, the Gospel of Luke, where Jesus especially spends much of his words here, gives these words as a preparation for us, as warning and as instruction, how we should be if we want to survive those days just before he returns, and survive them as Christians. When he returns, will he find faith on the earth, is one question that he asked. And I trust that we will be and can be among those faithful ones. In the 12th chapter of Luke, you know that, recognize this as the chapter where he talks about the rich man who had much goods and was making plans for his retirement, and he tore down his barns and built bigger because he was going to eat, drink, and be merry. But the Lord said, "This night shall thy soul be required of thee." And he's giving this to us as instruction on how we should live in the days that he's talking about, in the context of chapter 12. And I'm just going to read some from this chapter, beginning in verse 35. A number of times, as he talks about these things, he says that not one hair of your head is going to perish. How do you take that when just a couple of verses before he says you're going to be beheaded for my sake? But then he says, not one hair of your head is going to perish. And so how do we make sense out of that kind of teaching that seems almost contradictory? We'd say that's worst case scenario, to be beheaded for the sake of the gospel. And yet he says, not one hair head of your hair shall perish. One hair of your head. All right, chapter 12, verse 35. Let your loins be girded about and your lights burning. And ye yourselves like unto men that wait for their Lord when he will return from the wedding, that when he cometh and knocketh, they may open unto him immediately. Blessed are these servants whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find watching. Verily I say unto you that he shall gird himself and make them to sit down to meat, and will come forth and serve them. And if he shall come in the second watch or come in the third watch and find them so, blessed are those servants. Now, the instruction here to us is we need to be watching. And even at times that are most unlikely, the second watch, the third watch, from 9 o'clock at night until 3 o'clock in the morning, the time when people normally sleep, When we sleep the soundest, we should be watching. That's what he's telling us here. Always alert and watching for the return of the Lord so that we don't miss it, so that when he comes, that he will find us watching. And this know that he that if the good man of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not have suffered his house to be broken through. Be ye therefore ready also, for the Son of Man cometh at an hour when ye think not. And so that is some very primary, fundamental instruction that he gives to us, that we should watch, so that when he comes, that we're not caught unprepared. And there are a number of things that he mentions in regards to his coming that are going to happen. Some of it has to do with deception, that you watch that you're not deceived. Some of it has to do with persecution and other things that he mentions here, being taken up with the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches. Those things that can drown us and keep us from being ready and prepared. We need to be watching. There's so many things, so many areas that we need to be watchful in, so that when he comes, that we are ready. Maybe I'll just keep on reading here for a ways yet. Then Peter said unto him, Lord, speakest thou this parable unto us, or even to all? And the Lord said, Who then is that faithful and wise steward, whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household, and give them their portion of meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Of a truth, I say unto you that he will make him ruler over all that he hath. But and if that servant say in his heart, My Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to beat the men servants and maid servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, and be drunken, the Lord of that servant will come in a day when he looketh not for him, and at an hour when he is not aware, and will cut him in sunder, and will appoint him his portion with the unbelievers. And I'll stop there again to emphasize, and as Jesus emphasized here, what is going to be for those who are not ready. And that makes the urgency of being ready so much more intense, that if we're not ready, terrible things are going to happen to us. It's not just that we're going to miss out, but terrible things are going to happen to us if we're not ready when he comes. And so Jesus only taught of two ways and of two conditions, those of the prepared and those of the unprepared, those of the saved and those of the lost. And that servant which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. But he that knew not and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more. And as I look over us, over our group, over our Anabaptist heritage, and the blessings that we enjoy because of what has been given to us, what has been preserved for us by those who have gone before, our parents, our grandparents, and those who have gone even before them, and those who have come to the faith, all are equal. But the things that we enjoy as the people of God who are in the place that we are today, in the position that we are today, we would have to say, we would have to conclude that unto us much has been given. We have received much. And if we are going to value that which we have received, it's something that we want to transmit and to pass on to those, to our children, our grandchildren. But along with that, we have a great deal of responsibility, because much is going to be required. And so it puts a lot of responsibility on our shoulders for one thing, to value those things and to recognize the value of it. So many people today are just counting their heritage as less than nothing, as an impediment rather than an asset. But we have a lot to be thankful for, that God has allowed us to be born into this place when we could have been born into a hut in Africa or a house in Saudi Arabia or any other country. We had no choice in this. But we do have choices now. And we can choose to appreciate it and to propagate it and to use it for the glory and the building of the kingdom of God. Or if we don't value it, we can, in one generation or less, we can lose all that, which has cost many people a lot of blood and tears. Now I'd like to turn to the 21st chapter of Luke. And this is now, I think this is now on the second day. I didn't actually check this out, either the second or third day, that Jesus was there in Jerusalem and the surrounding area before his crucifixion. And he was giving some last-minute teaching here to his disciples. And again, it had a lot to do with how it's going to be when he returns. It's again giving instruction and examples of to help us to be prepared and to recognize that day and know what to do and then what to expect and how to respond. In Luke chapter 21, verse 7, and they ask him, saying, "Master, when shall these things be, and what sign will there be when these things shall come to pass?" And he said, "Take heed that ye be not deceived, for many shall come in my name, saying, 'I am Christ,' and the time draweth near. Go ye not therefore after them. But when ye shall hear of wars and commotions, be not terrified, for these things must first come to pass, but the end is not by and by." And that's something that we find a number of times throughout his teaching when he's talking about the last days. He says, don't be afraid, don't fear. Here he says, be not terrified. And as we see things happening in the world around us, you know, that is the that is kind of the response that comes a lot of times is, as we ask the question, you know, what's going to happen next? We can find ourselves being terrified or in fear about these things. But he says, remember that God is in control, and that even though you may be beheaded, yet not one hair of your head is going to perish. And I'll try to explain at least my thought on that a little later as we go on here. But he says, don't be afraid, because fear paralyzes and prevents us from a positive response and doing the right thing. Faith is what we need, not fear. Then said he unto them, "Nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and great earthquakes shall be in divers places, and famines and pestilences and fearful sights, and great signs shall there be from heaven. But before all these they shall lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you to the synagogue and into prisons, being brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. And it shall turn to you for a testimony. Settle it therefore in your hearts not to meditate before what ye shall answer, for I will give you a mouth and wisdom, which all your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay nor resist. And ye shall be betrayed, both by parents and brethren and kinsfolk and friends, and some of you shall they cause to be put to death. And you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but there shall not an hair of your head perish. In your patience possess ye your souls. Okay, I think I'll stop there. I read an article just recently that, and of course we had known this from before, that Christians are the most persecuted group of people in the world. And Christians continue to be the most persecuted group in the year 2016, the year that we have just come through. There's a report that has determined that 90,000 Christians were killed for their beliefs worldwide last year. And so in this past year, 90,000 people were killed simply because they were Christians. And we're not here to judge and to say, well, you know, were they really or weren't they? But at least they were professing Christians, and they were killed for that reason, because they were Christians. It was not just because they happened to be randomly somewhere. This same study also found that as many as 600 million Christians were prevented from practicing their faith in 2016. And that would be people who live in countries where it's illegal to convert to Christianity or to live your Christian faith. 600 million. It's a number that we can't fathom, that were prevented from practicing their faith openly in 2016. We're living in a unique situation for Christians. We are in the minority. To have the liberties that we have, to be able to enjoy what we're enjoying here this morning, to sit together in the house of God and fellowship and worship together without fear of some kind of, whether it's from the government, whether it's from our neighbors, or who it is, some kind of persecution, just simply for being Christians. And so maybe these words of Jesus don't mean as much to us as they would to someone who is facing things like that. And yet, that's not the only thing that he warns us about. He also warns us almost in every case against deception. Those who are the most eloquent, those who are the closest to the truth, those who embrace part of the gospel, are the most clever deceivers. And I think we need to be careful how much we allow ourselves to be influenced, and who the real heroes are, really, in the Christian faith. I think it's those who are faithful and who take the Word of God seriously. I'm just going to read a few more verses here in Luke 21. And this maybe is a little bit more of a positive note here. It says, there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, the seas and the waves roaring, men's heart failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. When these things begin to come to pass, the signs, the heaven and earth being shaken, and signs in the sky. Today, within a period of 30 minutes, there are nations on this earth, including our own, that could pretty well annihilate the human race in 30 minutes' time with the weapons of mass destruction. And who's holding that? Who's holding their hand to prevent that from happening? You know, God has that all in his hands. And he will not allow it to happen unless it's his will. And so it says men's hearts failing them for fear. We don't get up in the morning and think about this all day long. You know, the important thing for us is that our faith is based on something that's a lot more solid than our military defenses. In case somebody fires a nuclear missile over here, you know, they've got those anti-missile things that they shoot up and hopefully destroy them before they hit the earth. But that's not where our confidence is. Our confidence is in the fact that we are children of God and that, you know, whatever happens, we are prepared to meet the Lord. I'm going back now to the 12th chapter of Luke to answer the question about one hair of your, or yeah, not one hair of your head shall perish. In the first five verses of chapter 12, this is the chapter that we have read out of at the first. It says, in the meantime, when there were gathered together an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trod one upon another, he began to say unto his disciples, first of all, beware ye of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. And I want to clarify here. You know, sometimes people get all mixed up about what the sin of the Pharisees really was. Was it because they were legalistic, because they had a lot of rules, because they demanded things of others that they weren't willing to lift with their own little finger? You know, there was a lot of things involved here with the Pharisees. But the thing that Jesus condemned them for the most was for their hypocrisy. They put on a show or a face of religion, but inside they were corrupt. They were like sepulchers that were painted white on the outside, inside full of dead men's bones. He used a lot of examples like that to describe them. He says that we should beware of their leaven, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, neither hid that shall not be known. Therefore, whatsoever ye have spoken in darkness shall be heard in the light, and that which ye have spoken in the ear, in closets, shall be proclaimed upon the housetops. And I say unto you, my friends, be not afraid of them that kill the body, and after that have no more that they can do. And I think that is what Jesus meant when he said, even though you're going to be killed, not one hair of your head shall perish. Because that's all they can do. They can kill the body, but they cannot touch the soul. It says, be not afraid of them that kill the body, and after that have no more they can do. But I will forewarn you whom ye shall fear. Fear him which after he hath killed hath power to cast into hell. Yea, I say unto you, fear him. And so there is something that will be a much greater disaster than the largest nuclear bomb that can be used to destroy what we know and see here today. And that is a soul that finds himself, that wakes up, opens their eyes in hell, and it's forever. So let us take the words of Jesus seriously in the day that we're living in. We need to have our eyes open. We can look up, for our redemption draweth nigh. And you can imagine those who are facing persecution, who cannot practice their faith openly, how they must be longing for that day. Maybe we have it too easy. Maybe we don't think about that and say, Lord Jesus, come. We're ready for you to come now and deliver us from this world. And so, but let's remember that there may be some who are persecuted, some that are called to give their life for the sake of Christ. There are others who also are facing principalities and powers in the forms of deception. of all kinds. And so let's stay with the book. And that's one thing that he says there in the 22nd chapter. He says, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall never pass away. Shall we kneel in prayer?